Hey there, ready for another deep dive? Today we're taking a fresh look at the story of Hezekiah, the King of Judah, from the Bible. You sent over this fascinating lecture by Dr. John Oswalt, who's kind of a big deal when it comes to the Book of Kings, and let me tell you, he's got some surprising ideas about where Hezekiah's story really starts.
Yeah, we're not just retreading familiar ground here. Yeah, Dr. Oswalt's lecture series on Kings actually delves into this debate among scholars about whether this whole part about Hezekiah getting sick and then miraculously recovering, whether that originally belonged in the Book of Isaiah, not Kings. And he makes a pretty strong case for it, too.
So the source you gave us is part one of session 28 from that series, and he jumps right into this debate, talking about how the timeline in 2 Kings gets a little jumbled if you compare it to Isaiah.
Right. Like in 2 Kings, you've got Hezekiah facing off against the Assyrians in 701 BC. Super intense stuff. Then, boom, the very next chapter goes back in time to around 712 BC to tell the story of Hezekiah falling deathly ill. It's like a weird time warp. Mm-hmm. That kind of chronological flip-flop is pretty unusual for Kings, but it actually fits perfectly in Isaiah, where these events show up in chapters 38 and 39.
So, okay, it makes more sense chronologically in Isaiah, but why is that such a big deal for understanding Hezekiah? What difference does the placement really make?
Well, because it changes the whole meaning of the story. You see, in Isaiah, chapters 7 through 39 are all building up this theme of God being completely trustworthy. It's like a crescendo leading up to Hezekiah's incredible faith when facing the Assyrian siege. But then Isaiah puts Hezekiah's illness and recovery right before this climactic moment, right before Isaiah chapter 40, which is like a huge turning point in the book.
So it's like Hezekiah's example of trusting God is setting the stage for something even bigger.
Exactly. By putting his later failure, where he kind of messes things up, after this moment of triumph, it shows that even a guy like Hezekiah, who seems so strong in his faith, was still human. It sets the stage for the need for someone who would be perfectly obedient to God, someone like, well, the Messiah.
That really changes how you see Hezekiah, right? He goes from being just a good king to almost a symbol of humanity's need for redemption.
It really does. That's what I love about looking at these stories we think we know with a fresh perspective. And Dr. Oswalt doesn't stop there. He gets into how God actually talks to Hezekiah in this story, and it's pretty intense.
Yeah, no kidding. It's not exactly subtle. God straight up tells Hezekiah, get your affairs in order, you're going to die. Talk about a wake-up call.
What's really interesting is that Dr. Oswalt thinks God was being so blunt on purpose. He suggests that God was stripping away any illusion Hezekiah had about being in control. By forcing him to face his own mortality head-on, God was pushing him to completely rely on divine grace.
I think we can all relate to that feeling of hitting a wall in life when our own efforts just aren't enough and we have to surrender to something bigger than ourselves. Have you ever been in a situation like that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's often in those moments of complete vulnerability that we truly grasp just how much we need God. So Hezekiah, faced with this stark reality, turns to prayer. But then he says something really interesting. He claims to have walked before God faithfully and with a perfect heart.
Ah, yes, the perfect heart. That's where Dr. Oswalt's expertise in ancient Hebrew comes in handy. He explains that the Hebrew word translated as perfect actually means something more like whole or complete. It's not about being sinless, but about being totally devoted to God.
Right. He even uses this great analogy to explain it. He talks about how his own heart belongs perfectly to his wife, meaning it's totally hers, even if he's not always the perfect husband. It really makes the idea relatable, don't you think?
It does. So if a perfect heart isn't about being sinless, what is it really about?
It's about acknowledging our imperfections and looking to God for guidance. It's about choosing to surrender ourselves completely to God, knowing that we can't achieve perfection on our own, but we can be transformed by his power.
So Hezekiah is pouring his heart out to God, claiming this wholehearted devotion. But he doesn't just stop there, right? He asks God for a sign, some kind of physical confirmation that God's promise of healing is the real deal.
And that's where Dr. Oswalt points out this really interesting parallel. Remember Hezekiah's father, King Ahaz? When the prophet Isaiah offered him a sign from God, Ahaz totally refused. He said he wouldn't test God. But Hezekiah, he's different. He's eager to see God's power in action, you know, something tangible.
It really shows their different approaches to faith, doesn't it? One clinging to his own understanding, the other totally open to something more.
Yeah, exactly. And what a sign Hezekiah gets. God tells Isaiah to go back and tell him, not only will he be healed, but God will add 15 years to his life and deliver Jerusalem from the Assyrians. And to prove it, God even offers him a choice of signs.
Whoa. Now, you have to remember, at this time, the Assyrian Empire was like the big bad on the block. They were conquering everything in sight, and Judah was right in their path. To hear that God would deliver Jerusalem from them, that must have sounded unbelievable.
Oh, for sure. And that's where that chronological thing we were talking about before becomes even more significant. If Dr. Oswald's right about the timeline, this promise to deliver Jerusalem, it wasn't about something in the past. It was predicting a future event.
So it's not just about Hezekiah getting better anymore. It's about God's power to step into history, to make his promises happen, even when it seems impossible.
Precisely. But let's get back to that sign. God gives Hezekiah a choice. He can have the shadow on the sundial go forward 10 steps. Or backward 10 steps.
Hold on. A sundial. What kind of sundial are we talking about here?
Well, the Bible's a little vague on specifics, doesn't give us a blueprint or anything. But scholars think it was probably a pretty basic setup. Maybe just a set of stairs where the shadow cast by the steps would change position as the sun moved.
Okay, so maybe not the fancy sundial we picture today.
Yeah.
But the point is clear, right? God interrupted the natural order of things to make that sign happen.
Absolutely. And Hezekiah, probably wanting the most dramatic, undeniable sign, chooses to have the shadow go backward. So the shadow moves back 10 steps, time itself bending to God's will. Can you even imagine witnessing that?
Okay, my mind is blown. Time going backward. It's like something out of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
But it really makes you think, if God can do that, what else is possible?
Right. And Dr. Oswald admits, yeah, this raises some big questions about the nature of time and God's relationship to it. But at the end of the day, he emphasizes time itself is subject to God's power.
I'm starting to get why Dr. Oswald thinks this whole part of Hezekiah's story fits better in Isaiah. It's not just some random miracle. It's connected to these bigger themes of God's power and trustworthiness that run through the whole book.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Just when you think Hezekiah has learned his lesson about trusting God, things get interesting. In the very next chapter, envoys from Babylon show up, and Hezekiah makes a pretty big mistake.
Wait, Babylon? Wasn't that the empire that eventually conquered Judah? The one that took the people into exile?
That's the one. And that's what makes what Hezekiah does so interesting. He decides to show off all the treasures of his kingdom to these Babylonian envoys, like he's boasting about his wealth and power.
Well, maybe he was just trying to be a good host, right? Hospitality is important.
Sure, but Dr. Oswald points out that the prophet Isaiah was furious when he found out about it. He confronts Hezekiah, predicting that all that wealth and splendor he just flaunted, yeah, it would all be carried off to Babylon someday, and that Hezekiah's own descendants would be taken captive.
I can't believe he did that. I mean, he just had this incredible miracle. You'd think he'd be full of humility and gratitude, but instead, pride.
It's a classic example of how easily success and good fortune can mess with human nature. It's like we forget that everything we have is a gift from God, and we start thinking we earned it. Like we're special.
And that kind of pride, it blinds us to the consequences of our actions. Hezekiah was so caught up in the moment, so eager to impress these guys, that he missed the bigger picture.
It's a cautionary tale for all of us. No matter how successful we are, how much we're blessed, we gotta stay humble before God. True security, it's not in our possessions or our accomplishments, it's in our relationship with him.
So what's the takeaway from all this? What can we learn from Hezekiah, his good moments and his bad ones?
I think Hezekiah's life shows us how complex faith and human nature really are. On the one hand, there's his deep devotion to God, his willingness to pray, to seek God's guidance, even when staring death in the face. And we see his faith rewarded with healing, with an absolutely mind-blowing miracle.
But then we see him fall prey to pride, make a decision with some pretty terrible consequences, almost like that saying, two steps forward, one step back.
Exactly. His story is a reminder that even the most devout people can make mistakes. We're all works in progress, right? And it highlights how important it is to stay humble and remember that we need God's grace every step of the way.
And these themes, faith, humility, the danger of pride, they're not just ancient history, are they? They're just as relevant today as they were back then.
Absolutely. We all face that temptation to boast in our achievements, to put our trust in our own strength, our own resources. But Hezekiah's story, it's a reminder. True strength, true security, they come from admitting that we need God, from surrendering our lives to his will.
Of everything we've talked about, what stands out to you as the most important takeaway from this part of Dr. Oswald's lecture? What do you hope our listeners will really remember?
For me, it's this. God is incredibly powerful and deeply personal at the same time. He's capable of mind-blowing miracles. of intervening in history in ways we can't even fathom. But he's also invested in our individual lives. He hears our prayers, sees our struggles, and he wants to draw us closer.
I love that. It makes me think about how we often try to compartmentalize our faith, keep it separate from everyday life. But Hezekiah's story, it reminds us that God's active in all of it, big and small, the miraculous and the mundane.
Exactly. And it's in those seemingly ordinary moments, the everyday decisions, the little interactions, that's where we have the chance to choose humility over pride, choose faith over fear, choose obedience over self-reliance.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a question. Where are you tempted to rely on your own strength, your own accomplishments? Where are you holding back from fully surrendering to God's will?
These are questions worth thinking about. As we continue to explore Hezekiah's story, and as we navigate our own lives, because even when we mess up, even when we take a step back, God's grace is always there to guide us forward.
Okay, so we've seen Hezekiah at his best, a man of faith who got this miraculous healing and really saw God's power firsthand. But then we've also seen him, well, not at his best, letting that pride get to him and making a decision with some pretty serious consequences down the road.
Almost like a morality play, right? Showing how even the most faithful people can trip up. But what's really interesting is Hezekiah's story doesn't just end there. It doesn't end with him messing up.
You're right. He doesn't just blow off Isaiah's prophecy. He actually responds with humility, with repentance, admits his mistake, asks for God's mercy.
And that's a really big moment. It shows his character. You know, Hezekiah could have easily gotten defensive or tried to justify what he did, but no, he owns up to it.
And God, being the God of second chances, he responds with grace, delays the fulfillment of that prophecy, so it won't happen until after Hezekiah is dead.
Really says something about how God judges, doesn't it? It's not about punishing us for our mistakes. It's about guiding us back to the right path. It's like God's discipline always comes from a place of love, a desire for what's truly good for us.
It's a good reminder that even when we screw up, we're not hopeless. So as we wrap up this whole deep dive into Hezekiah's story, what are some key takeaways for us today? I mean, what can we learn from his journey, the highs, the lows, all of it?
Well, Hezekiah's life reminds us that faith, it's a journey, not a destination, right? We'll all have those mountaintop moments of victory and then times when we totally faceplant. But through it all, God's there, offering his grace, offering his guidance.
And a lot of times, it's those faceplant moments, those times when we're forced to see our own weaknesses, that's when we have the biggest opportunity to grow. Like Hezekiah shows us that true humility, it's not about never messing up. It's about owning our mistakes, learning from them, and letting God use them to change us.
This deep dive has really made us look beyond the surface of the text, hasn't it? It's helped us to understand those nuances of how ancient Hebrews thought and to appreciate, you know, the complexities of biblical interpretation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I feel like I have a completely new perspective on this story. Dr. Oswald's insights, they've really made Hezekiah come alive, not just a name in the Bible, but a real person with real struggles, real triumphs, things we can all connect with.
Yeah, I think his story ultimately brings us back to this fundamental truth. We're all capable of great things when we're walking in obedience to God, but it's also a warning, right? A warning about how dangerous pride can be, how dangerous it is to rely only on ourselves.
So as you go about your week, I want to encourage you to remember this. Time, it's in God's hands. He's working everything together for good, for those who love him. Trust his plan, even when you don't get it. And let his grace be your guide.
And hey, if you want to learn even more about Hezekiah, about the kings of Judah, I definitely recommend checking out part 2 of Dr. Oswald's lecture. There's always more to discover.